Hey, Richie McCormack here from OTB's Rugby Daily. We'll keep you up to date throughout this year's Six Nations. So subscribe to Off The Ball Rugby and you can listen to Rugby Daily for free wherever you get your podcasts.
The Six Nations. Join in the obsession.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy.
Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome along to the Hurling Pod. It is week 3. It is podcast number 5. And I can guarantee this is a podcast in which I've hit record. Because I've hit record, I've checked it's recording, and now I've checked a second time in the top corner just to make sure as well. We are underway. The leagues are back. And I'm delighted to say James Gale is somewhere in the air right now as we're recording this podcast. I believe he's potentially stuck in a toilet, which is one of his phobias, is that he reckons he can't get back out of an airplane toilet. So that's what he's up to at the moment. So as a result, there's a different man to my right on the screen right now. Sean Flynn is with us. Sean, welcome along to the pod.
How are we getting on? I promise I won't curse as much as Gale. So that's all I can promise.
I'm not sure that was part of the deal when we reached out to see if you'd come on, because we've been reading your articles for the last couple of years and kind of chatting about stats and bits and bobs along the way and hurling coaching. So we felt it was probably right to bring you on when we had a free seat. I don't know how much of a task it is to sit in for Skell there.
Sure, look, I just want to give loads of abuse to Galwellans. That's all I do.
Want to even it out after all the abuse else is after getting.
The other voice or face you see is Paul Murphy, of course, who's here. He's missed his one pod for the year, so he's available for the rest of the season. The Hurling Pod is with thanks to Bord Gáis Energy. They are the proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship. We're looking back in the first weekend of the league. We had some very competitive games, including the wait goes on for Derek Ling to have a win as Kilkenny manager at senior level against Wexford. A very entertaining draw, which Murph was watching, 2-16 apiece. We had Clare do well in what they call the championship quarter of the game at this stage, especially that kind of 10-minute spell after halftime. They hit 7 out of 8 points against Cork, eventually coming out on top. Really well taken goal by Shane Amori late on after a great pass from David Fitzgerald as they won by 125 to 219 in Ennis. Waterford, well, awfully were kind of the masters of their own downfall in a way with some of the goals they conceded, but two from Stephen Bennett in the course of a minute when Waterford were playing against the wind helped them to beat Offaly by 320 to 17 points. In 1B, Tipperary, which Sean was watching, we're going to talk about that in a moment, overcoming Dublin. Jake Morris with a very good finish from a tight angle for his goal, 1-4 in all for him. Tip were clinical, especially in that second half. Dublin maybe a little bit disappointing, but Tip winning by 227 to 22 points. The other two games were complete and utter blowouts, really. A 31-point win for Galway. A couple of goals for Jason Flynn as they beat Westmeath by 431 to 12 points. And Limerick, despite the fact they only had 4 starters from the All-Ireland final last year, eased to victory against Antrim in Semple Stadium, winning by 136 to 1-9. So they were the games in 1B. I think, Murph, we can probably start with the action that you saw in person in Nolan Park yesterday. We had a game that was it 9-4 at halftime? I don't know if we necessarily thought we were going to see the thrilling second half, and particularly the thrilling last 5 minutes or so that we saw in the game, which eventually was level after Wexford scrambled home a late goal.
Yeah, I suppose, look, the first half, there wasn't a huge amount to write home about in the first half. I had Wexford down for, I think, 4 scores in the first half with maybe 1 wide, just showing that they really weren't getting in on goal with Kilkenny, not really creating a lot of opportunities. Kilkenny down the other end, I think, had about 6 wides at the end of the first half, were creating opportunities. But, look, symptomatic at this time of the year, there was a lot of balls, I suppose, being dropped. There was a lot of misplaced passes. Both sides, I think, would feel that the play was quite flat at times, in that they were probably going an extra pass into wide, you know, going laterally across the field, as opposed to actually just driving on up the field. Again, those are all things you'd expect to see from teams in the first round. But the second half, you know, in fairness, it did kick into life. And I think from a Wexford point of view, particularly from Keith Roster, but also from the supporters, like throughout, in fairness, Wexford were getting stuck in. They were really going at Kilkenny where they could. Again, not perfect at times, but they were showing fight, they were showing battle, they were getting involved. They'll be happy with the likes of Conor Foley came up from full back and got 2 points, which was great. You know, it just showed that he wasn't afraid to, you know, drive on up the field and support Wexford while in attack. Wexford looked lively, they looked fit. So I think from a Wexford point of view, they'll be happy coming away from Nolan Park with a draw game. Kilkenny, as Derek Ling said after the game, will probably be disappointed that after they got that last penalty and went up by 3 points, that they didn't just close it out there. I think that's what Kilkenny will be disappointed with. But certainly both sides probably out of all teams weekend, I think Kilkenny and Wexford will be happy enough in terms of identifying areas that they want to build on. And also the amount of players really that they got runs into. There was a lot of young players on the field, a lot of lads making, you know, basically debuts for their senior team. So I think both sides will be happy that they've identified lots of things to work on. But, you know, for quite large parts though of this game, there was, you know, play was broken up with just mistakes on both sides. But again, that's all things you'd expect from this time of year. So, look, I think in fairness, a draw was a fair result.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, Sean, for Wexford is about maybe just bringing through some of those players that played so well at underage level for a key roster and getting them now into the starting 15, because they've been presented with that challenge of coming in without Conor McDonald at the start of the campaign. Rory O'Connor, they're waiting for him to come back as well. So it's an opportunity for some of these young players now to stake a claim. And we were talking about Keane Byrne last week, who came off the bench and scored 1-1 and got that goal right at the end of the game. It's well set up for some of those lads from the 20s teams from the last 2 years to maybe make an impression now in the league between now and the end of the campaign.
Yeah, and you have to take your chance. Like, even watching last year, Wexford, like, they're still going back to the same kind of core group of 15 or 20. So they really need someone to push on. But I was up at Galway and Wexford last year now in the championship. And, like, you know, Lee Chin was injured and didn't play. And, like, even the fact that Lee Chin is playing now, it's probably keeping them competitive in games and they can bring in some of those players. Because remember they played Clare last year and they had a lot of injuries and they got absolutely wiped. So, like, you do need that sort of mix, that you have a few established players, throw in your couple of young players then, because if you just go in with a, I suppose, a carte blanche kind of young team against the top teams in the league, especially in league games, you're probably not going to see how good they really are. Like, and that's why I liked even the weekend, they mixed between the, you know, the players that have four or five, six championship seasons together and throwing in a couple of new lads. So yeah, it's important for Wexford, and I suppose, like, the big thing for Wexford is, like, are they going to play with a sweeper now, or are they just going to go play, you know, 15 on 15, go for it and maybe just drop lads back? Like, I don't know, what did it look like yesterday, Dan Paul?
Yeah, to be fair to them, like, typical of when we would have played Wexford a few years ago, Wexford would be happy enough to kind of sit back with maybe an extra man, win the ball in that area, and then kind of flood forward with a lot of runners off the shoulder. Now, that'll be typical, I suppose, of Davy Fitzgerald teams, but they do seem to have retained a bit of that, in that they always kind of had an extra man. Well, they appear to have an extra man just sitting on the D there at times. But to be fair, it didn't feel very defensive. They seemed to be doing it at times just to stifle Kilkenny, particularly in the first half when Kilkenny had the wind. But after that, after they won the ball, they used it really well, but they moved it out into the channels where those runners could come up. It wasn't a very, I suppose I'd call it, a physical Wexford team. They were definitely very fit and quite strong, but the priority seemed to be on running the ball where they could. But at the same time, I mean, they didn't get a huge return off the long ball, but you could see that they were willing to use it, which is encouraging as well, because, you know, if they're running that ball out, you're going to draw teams onto you, but then that occasional long ball will usually reap benefits. What I thought was actually really good was the use of the ball down the lines into the channels. Like, they're targeting the two corner forwards there between Seamus Casey and James Byrne. They actually targeted them really well and gave them good ball that they could come onto. So it wasn't just a case of a hit and hope or striking it into an area. To be fair to Wexford, they were getting the head up, having a look. And the first few scores they got, I think, was actually just getting it into the corner there. First few scores from play, should I say, was actually getting the head up, seeing that there was a player coming out from full forward, out to the wing, landing the ball in front of them. And the two boys in the corner were really fast. So, you know, you can see what they're trying to do, which is great, because as a Wexford supporter, certainly, but even from a neutral looking at Wexford, you know, a good, lively Wexford team in the championship is a great thing to have, because they're capable of turning over lots of teams. They're a very passionate team and they play with a lot of heart. And I think we saw flickers of that there yesterday. So their style seemed to be very much, like I said, was obviously they want to protect that full back position, have a lad back there. But once they got the ball, in fairness, they were trying their best to run it up the field and create those scoring chances. So I think as they get a few more games under the belt, we'll see them really starting to open the shoulders. And I think what Keith Rosser is trying to do in the team, I think we'll really see a great brand that will be complemented when you return the likes of Dee O'Keefe and Rory O'Connor and these lads into the team, because it was a young team, but they still seem to understand what they're trying to do, which, again, I suppose, you know, Sean, when you're seeing, if all your panel understand what you're trying to do and you can see it on the field, that's very encouraging, because you have a greater pool of players to slot into any position once every player understands what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and even for Kilkenny, like, how would the likes of Harry Shine, how I would have thought in Kieran's there, and I was seeing him playing, and, like, Derek doesn't seem to be afraid to throw in like young lads. I know he was with the 20s. Like, he doesn't seem to be afraid to throw in like Killian Dye last year and Harry and these lads. And how did he go? Like, is he?
I suppose where the full forward line as a whole, I think, would be disappointed with was just making the ball stick when it was coming in. There was good ball coming in, but this time of the year, really, I would see it as it does favour the defenders, because the ball, like, you know, you could have Harry shining onto a ball there that lands perfectly for him, but it just gets caught in the ground, and suddenly now the defender's on your back and you can't get the ball into your hand and move it on. So the Kilkenny full forward line in general, you know, there was a few missed touches and things, you know, all things that wouldn't be getting caught up about. But, you know, they didn't have the same return, I would have felt, as Wexford. Like, Kilkenny hit Ivan down for 8 wides here, whereas Wexford only seemed to hit 4 over the game. They were just that bit cuter and that bit better at converting their chances. As I was saying as well, Wexford were sitting back that little bit more. So if the Kilkenny full forward line didn't get the ball into the hand the first time, they were getting bottled up very quickly. But Derek, in fairness, like you said, Liam Blanchfield was out and Harry Shine was in from the start. Harry Shine, he looked lively, he was making good runs, and even at times when he was getting bottled up, he did come out with the ball and recycled it really well. So I think, in fairness to Derek, which is great, you know, younger players can't say that they're not getting an opportunity under him. You know, you had Pádraig Míle in the corner back again, had a good game as well. There was lots of lads there, even Jordan Malloy there, we saw him playing with the Loughlins during the year. Jordan Malloy was straight in a wing back there as well. Kevin Blanchfield, another fella as well, who's Liam and David Blanchfield's brother, in midfield. So he's given lots of lads lots of opportunities, something definitely the Kilkenny crowd would be encouraged by. But also, for a panel point of view, you know, if you're a younger player, the one thing you want is just an opportunity here and there. And if you're not taking it, you can nearly make a peace with it. So Derek, in fairness to him, you said at the start, Sean, that mix of experience with youth. There's definitely youth being injected into that panel and into the starting 15. So from a younger player point of view, I think, you know, if you're going to be playing under Derek Ling, he will give you your opportunity. He'll give you your opportunity definitely against good teams, and he's not afraid to do that. But it's a matter of taking that opportunity as well. Similar to what Billy Drennan did, I suppose, last year, consistently through the league.
Yeah, like, so let's think, Murph, that Billy got the injury just at the wrong time, just before a championship came around last year. Again, he comes in, like, wonderful dead ball striker, isn't he? Hit the two penalties perfectly. Was unlucky, maybe was slightly outside of his range for the one that could have went over to win the game at the end. But big contribution off the bench. 2-3 in that cameo appearance.
Yeah, I had him down for, I think it was a 48 minute he came on and scored 2-3, could have been 2-4. And I know you'll say, okay, two penalties there as well, but struck him to the same side of Mark Fanning, but was confident in what he was doing, knew what he was at. Like, one thing I would say about Billy Drennan, and I think lots of coaches would say to players, is that, particularly in the likes of dead ball situations, almost being mechanical in what you're doing, that you have a routine, you know what you're about, and before, particularly with penalties, before you're stepping up, already deciding what you're going to do. I mean, Billy seems that he's decided before he steps over a penalty what he's going to do. Struck two to the same side, which shows a great deal of confidence there. Lots of other players might change it up to the far side, but, you know, he was excellent. And, you know, coming on and getting 2-3 off the bench, that's a huge contribution coming down the last 20 minutes in the game. Okay, he missed the last one, he'll be disappointed with that. But we did see, you know, Lee Chin missed a fairly scoreable free as well in the first half against that wind. So you wouldn't be too concerned that, you know, in those situations, there was, you know, the elements were at play as well. And you'd forgive him, considering he came on, got 2-3, missing one at the end there. Like, you know, you are going to forgive that. But he was very calm when he came on. Like, I mean, he scored the second penalty, but he also set it up. You know, he ran through, drew out two Wexford backs, and then a loop and hand pass over to Billy Ryan as well. So from a young player to come on and have an impact like that, I mean, that's the example that Derek will be saying as well to younger players, to say, look at lads, this is his second year on the panel, and already people kind of consider him as a level-headed fella to have. These are traits you should be showing. So he's a great example for younger players coming through. And again, I do think he's a player that will build on what he did last year. I think he'll identify himself that, okay, maybe didn't have a good league final, I need to keep progressing on, not just be happy with what I've done. But I think the next day, and I think more consistently, I think Billy Drennan will be starting for Kilkenny, because, like you said, unfortunate injury last year, but he seems to bring just a savage consistency to Kilkenny, when particularly during the league, because he's trying to make a statement, I think, to the management as well.
Just something interesting you said, Murph, there about, like, teams sitting back well, like, say, Wexford. I think that's something that probably Kilkenny needs to work on. So when they're playing against a team who is sitting back and they know what they're really doing, like, maybe Clare didn't probably do it last year in the semi-final, but, like, you know, Wexford have done that over the last couple of years. You know, anytime Limerick are in trouble against Kilkenny, like their 2 half-hours go right back in into their own half and really kind of dug up their half of the field and then work the ball out. And even the club final, I thought, even Loughlin's and St. Thomas's in the second half, like St. Thomas's kind of sat off with Loughlin's, and Loughlin's didn't really know what to do. With, you know, they were hitting sharp hookouts and then they were going along, and kind of Thomas's were happy with them doing that because they had their own half pack. So that's probably an area like that, maybe, you know, especially if you want to do like Kilkenny are, they've proven that they're the second best team in the country over the last couple of seasons. So like, I think that's probably something they need to work on and probably target. And you know, maybe only against the likes of Wexford and Limerick, you only want to get that proper test. But still, it'd be interesting to see can they work around it and what to do with maybe wing backs or midfielders or their own wing forwards. Like, I know they usually drop their wing forwards deep, but it'd be interesting to see like what they can do on it.
Yeah, yeah, I think absolutely. Like, I mean, it wouldn't be anything, I suppose, new to say that, you know, we in Kilkenny, and particularly teams I played in, were probably later to the game in terms of other teams over the years, particularly around the mid, around, let's say, 2014, 15, 16, as the game was kind of changing and teams were becoming a bit more savvy about sitting back. And I'd agree with what you're saying. I would say that Kilkenny, where they would get most benefits from it, is that, let's say, they want to play a certain way where, like at the moment, to do with lads who kind of flood back to, okay, I won't say flood back, but they do sit back to a degree in that Kilkenny win the ball in the backs. Often it's Richie Reid is the outman, and Richie Reid goes to spread it across the pitch and get the diagonal ball to shift the focus of the play across to the far side. And they're really good at that. But where I think they would benefit would be definitely that being able to shift it for even 10 minutes of the game. Like you were saying there, you know, if you're playing against Cork next week, for example, Cork are getting a bit of a run on you, and you figure out, listen, lads, we do need, and that's not to say it's not something that Kilkenny do, but it's just need something maybe they need to get a bit sharper at, is as a whole identifying that as a team, not waiting for Derek and the lads to say it, and just sit back to stifle that bit of a purple patch that teams may get. Because I agree with what you're saying, at times I think Kilkenny are nearly too honest in what they do, that they nearly retain their formation so much to try and stick to the game plan, that maybe they'd benefit from a little bit more of, okay, for this period where a team is getting run on us, let's sit back a small bit more, absorb what the team is throwing at us, and then once we get back in control and we retain, because Limerick do it the whole time, and Limerick are really good at it, where they identify when a team is coming at them, and everybody starts, I suppose, really sitting back and really crowding out that area. But it is something for Kilkenny, and I will say it, I suppose, Kilkenny have found it hard against Wexford over maybe even the last decade or so. Wexford do enjoy playing against Kilkenny, and I think teams that play against Kilkenny over the last good few years do enjoy running the ball at Kilkenny, because they know that running the ball at Kilkenny may press up high on you and you may get that bit of space in behind. So, no, I'd agree with you. Yeah, it is certainly something that Kilkenny are coming to the game with, but maybe we're just a little bit later than other teams in terms of actually implementing it, or even taking it a step further and actually, you know, going and sitting back that little bit further while teams are in their purple patch.
Like, because, like, the beauty about Kilkenny is, like, that you were in Kieran's yourself, like, every Kilkenny player is able to hurl. Every Kilkenny player is so comfortable taking a ball like straight at his head and catching it. And like, that might sound so basic, but like, the fact that Kilkenny are so good at the basics, it's small things like that. And it's only a small thing. I think if they could get that right, I think they could go a 70 minutes with the likes of Limerick. Because like, you know, I kind of saying it to Will, like, you're watching teams trying to play the ball out, and it's just the basics of actually controlling the ball and taking it under pressure in the hand, like, that's what they're falling down on. Whereas Kilkenny, it's just natural to them. Like, you know, I remember teaching there, like, in the morning time at 8:30 in the morning, there's lads out on the pitch and there's one lad poking the ball down on top of 10 lads and they're all just going hell for leather at it, and they're doing the same at break time and lunch time. So it's just constant, like, you know, and that's why they're good. Like, they're good in the air, they're good with all the basics. So it's like, it's only those small things, I think, that are catching Kilkenny. And it's like, look, you're not looking at them to play like Cork or Wexford and play sweepers or anything like that. You're just that small little bit of any, even as you say, like, I think Kilkenny benefit from teams coming at them. You know, they can really punish them. But it is when a Wexford or a Limerick team like that stayed off, that's when they just need to do something different now than they have been doing. Like.
Mm.
Sean, I'd normally ask Gail about puckouts at this stage, because you brought it up very nicely, the idea of teams trying to work it through the lines and work it out from the back. So for the Wexford first goal, Kilkenny were caught in a turnover from a short puckout. You saw Offaly give away a couple of goals from one not clearing a free and then making a mess of the puckout straight afterwards as well. You were writing about the puckouts last week, and Scale had been reading through it. It was actually kind of brought up a conversation we were having last week, where it seemed as if maybe the trend was moving a bit away from those shorter style puckouts, but last season we saw a return back in that direction again.
Yeah, and actually something interesting, I throw it up on Twitter later. When Cork played Clare yesterday, in the second half, and they had the wind, at one stage they had four players in their full back line, four players across their half back line inside the 45, and they had two wing forwards just right outside the 45. So basically nearly, they had 10 players kind of inside that area. And they worked the ball out, and basically they got a ball into the full forward line. Now, it wasn't one in the full forward line, but what it did was it gave a huge question to, say, Clare's two wing backs. Do I push? Do I stay? Same with Clare midfield. Do I push? Do I stay? Do I stay? And I'd say we could see that puck out more often now, because they're looking at the likes of Limerick and going, geez, even Kilkenny, we can't stay pucking it down on half back line and midfield and getting annihilated on the breaks. We have to try something different. So, like, I definitely think, like, for teams that have strong half back lines, like that's why I say the short puckouts are being used. But, like, I see some teams, they're trying to play short puckouts with 6v6, like 6 backs v 6 forwards. I don't know what you think, Paul. Unless you're going straight long up the line or something like that, when the cornerback gets the ball, he's just turning around and going straight down up the line, and they've something planned up at the other end of the field where, you know, they're breaking a ball or they've numbers to a break, because it's very dodgy trying to work the ball out 6v6. I remember Galway, even it's a good one to ask Skettle about, Galway playing Limerick in the All-Ireland Finals in 2018. Like Limerick kind of let the Galway full back line have the ball, and they just kind of let him come out with the ball on two catches, and then they were turning it over, especially in that first 15 or 20 minutes. They got a bit of joy off it. So, but I do think another thing is the quick puck outs, like, from the, especially now we can see it even yesterday in the Clare and Cork game. Like, if a ball goes wide and the ball is pucked out straight away, like, it makes sense to just literally bang it out straight away. The opposition isn't set, and just have a go working it and going for a shot or putting it into the full forward line. But, and like, even it's more pronounced probably now with the wind. Like, the wind for Saturday and Sunday, the wind kind of ruined games. Jesus, if you're able to get a quick puck out if you have a wind, one, two passes, you could be having a shot nearly inside your own half and it's over the bar. So I don't know, I'd say teams are definitely working on it, because, like, again, it's like Kilkenny back in the day, Paul, when we were playing, like, everyone's kind of modelling your game off trying to take down the best team. And, like, at the moment, the two best teams are strong in the air, and they're strong in their half back line. So they're trying to come up with ways to kind of negate that. And I think I even Cork now, I was interested to see Cork doing that, because, like, that's Cork's weakness, is breaking ball after long puckout. That's where they really, really struggle. And just winning that 50-50 ball. Like, they're very good if ball goes dead and they can hit a long puckout quick and into space, if players run onto it. But when they just have to kind of, you know, there's a break in play and then the ball is pucked out and the opposition have time to set, and they have to go to war underneath a high ball and on the break, that's where they really get blown out of games and struggle. And that's where they probably sometimes you'd see in games when Cork play, they get into these cycles where the opposition have a shot, they go along, the opposition turn the ball over and go again and get a shot again. And that's why they were really using that sharp puck out. But I think if they get that right, filing bodies into their own, loads of bodies into their own half and working the ball out, it'd be interesting to see what they can do in championship games. But again, doing it in a league game, well, you probably know, like, doing it in a league game and then doing it in a championship game are totally two different things. Like,
yeah, completely. Like, I mean, it's a great point that you make about Cork having so many players in the half, because, like you said, 6-on-6, if you do a short puck out and something goes wrong, when I say something goes wrong, that miscontrols it, it now becomes a 50-50 ball lads are fighting for. And what also happens then, I feel, is that teams maybe lose a bit of confidence in terms of what they're doing. You know, what you're initially trying to do is retain that possession, a guaranteed bit of possession of puck out, and try to build from there. Like you said, then the opposition then have to ask themselves, do I push up or do I sit back off it? Which is always, if you have an opposition asking that question, you're doing something right, because you're posing a question for the opposition. So the benefit of having so many lads there is that ideally, let's say I take it in corner back, take the puck out in corner back, I want two options. It's not necessarily one. You should have two options, really. And it's like, if you want to even reference other games like Barcelona with a triangle, where if the lad is coming in to try and close you down, if he's going right, I can either take him on or pop it off. But now that there's another option where I actually have a third player or a second player that I can pop it off to, it's very hard for that player closing down to try and actually get the ball off you. But you often see a drill that teams do before game, or they do in training sessions, where they do the weave, they do a three-man weave with the ball. It's, you know, probably every team in the country does it in hurling. But that idea implemented into a game doesn't necessarily happen a whole lot, in that a player often on the ball will have one option, but not two options. When a player has two options on the ball, very rarely will they get turned over, because they have two good options in front of them. And for a short puck out, that's essential, really, because there's less pressure on the player to control that ball the first time. If he miscontrols it, he can get it up into the hand, still has two options, probably a lateral pass across to a fullback who's making a run, or you have the halfback or whatever it may be. So having more options, and then let's say if the ball gets turned over, you now have a lot of defenders there to actually defend that situation. So it most likely won't result in a score for the opposition team. But definitely, like, I agree with what you're saying. Like, there's no point in practicing these things before or only when you meet Limerick. You know, you need to have a few tricks up your sleeve before you meet the likes of Limerick. And again, lots of things that we'll be talking about even throughout the year will be, will this work when you play your Limericks? And that's really it. Will this work when you play Limerick? But it is interesting to see that with Cork, because, like you said, when Cork are tenacious and when they're fighting, it's often things we're critical about them over the years. When they do that, they're brilliant. And the likes of Declan Dalton and these, I think, is bringing that back into the team, that bit of steel, that bit of fire. But we often don't see that on the long puck out with Cork, where they're actually willing to go up and be tigerish fighting for the ball in the air. They're usually happy to move the ball out through the lines. But oftentimes we've seen them trying to move the ball out through the lines as well, and they struggle at doing that at times when they're not fiery, when they're not tenacious. So I think it's, for this Cork team, which I am really looking forward to seeing during this year, I do think they're going to build on what they did last year. Hopefully Declan Dalton gets back from the injury, and that we see him getting back into the team as well. That a Cork team that has all the skill, great running, they have great players, and they have a big panel as well at the moment. If they have a few different tricks, not even, you know, tricks, a few different styles of play that they want to play, and a few different questions they can ask of teams, like you're identifying there against Clare, I think that Cork team could really bring it to huge levels to taking on this Limerick team. And I think that's something that we need, particularly in Munster, that we do really have a fiery Cork team that is not afraid to express themselves on the pitch, that is trying new things and maybe asking questions in Limerick that haven't been asked previously.
What's wrong, Sean?
Go on, you go first. And like, just like, even basics, like for club teams, like when you're doing short puckouts, like, I mean, you have to always ask why you're doing it. Like, are you doing it just because for the sake of it? And then you're wondering, like you have to have some sort of plan. Like, and even basic one, going out to the corner back and getting it long, like, if it's over the half back line, that's your job done. Like, if you get it over the half back line, it's up to your forwards to win it.
Yeah.
Like, you obviously, a lot of times you see Sean Finn, he'll get a short puck out and he'll look to play it in front of, like, say, Garrow Hagerty, Tom Morrissey, or someone like that. If that's not on, like, they bring it up and they'll just put it into their full forward line, and you just have to win it at that stage. Like, sometimes we kind of, I don't know, you'd be worried that you're trying to make, you're thinking of the non-contact kind of scenario where it's lovely and ball off the shoulder into the hand, strike into the hand, bang, it's over the bar. But like there is an element where there's times you have to go to war, whereas it's the ball into the full forward line, or it's the ball in front of a half forward. But again, it goes back to the basics. Like, you see teams trying it, and you know, a ball falls out of their hand when it comes to them, or to control it, and it takes two or three touches to control it, and then bang, it's under pressure. Like Dublin the other day, now they know they're playing against a strong breeze, but to try to work it out, and like the amount of times that it just broke down from them, and they were trying passes, there was no line in sight for a pass, they were trying to thread it through an eye of a needle or over somebody, and it's very hard to do. Like, and again, you have to look at what you have. Like, Cork have the players, the ball players. Like, you know, Limerick have the ball players, Kilkenny have the ball players, but there is some teams that don't have probably players comfortable in their backs to do that at intercounty level, especially if you're going up against a better team. So I just find, like, two basics on the short puckouts. I think either you have an overload, which means you have seven or eight players in your own half, like you're saying, and you can have your two or three options, or you're putting it in front or over the half back line of the opposition. And after that, you know, I think there's no more you can do. Like, you know, and I that might even still sound complicated, but like, I think sometimes Cork do try and overcomplicate it with 6, 7, 8, 9 passes and they're working the ball out then, and their whole defensive shape is gone because four or five of their defenders have been involved working the ball out. The ball is turned over the forwards and there's no shape to their back line, and that's why there's pockets of space and teams can just bang it in there and forwards are able to get handy scores. So like, sometimes it does work against Cork when they do lose the ball in the forward line, they're after working the ball out, and that's where they're getting caught. Like, it's small things like that that do catch them out.
We're jumping around a little bit, Sean, but I'm thinking about that Dublin performance on Saturday, which I thought was quite disappointing. Now, I do like the fact that we're getting more games on TV this season. Even this coming weekend, we've got a doubleheader on Saturday, doubleheader on Sunday. So we're seeing 4 of the 6 matches. And it was helpful to have that game on Saturday afternoon to make sure we had more hurling to watch in the weekend just gone by. But like, that was one of the things you would identify about Dublin, is that last year, I think of the Antrim game, I think of other times when they went direct and they let their forwards try and win their own ball, and Dublin were very threatening, especially at Parnell Park. Yet they seemed to move away from that against Tipperary, which played right into Tip's hands.
Yeah, no, the breeze was bad. So I'd say if you were later in the ball from your own 45, it was dropping, the wind was holding it up. But maybe they are missing a few lads. They're missing Crummie and there's a few lads not there, like, but God, like, when you're looking at Dublin the other day, like, a basic game for them would suit them, and maybe that would make them more competitive, as you say, like just getting the ball in to lads that are well able to win the ball in the air or break it down and funnel in on the breaks. But there was a lot of cases there where balls were being played up when they were played up, and it was to one-off runners, and you know, if you don't win a first time, then it's picked away, and Tipper were able to crowd the one man then, and they were able to break out with the wind. But it was disappointing. Like, I kind of was worried about going up there. Like, I was kind of saying, geez, Parnell Park, now will Dublin have something in the first round of the league? You know, would they give Tipperary a problem, especially running at them, you know, on the inside and full forward line? But kind of never. The first ball to Tronin, they ran at Tipperary and they got a pint out of them. And after that, then it was just a bit all over the place. And you know, there was a time the goalie just 3 or 4 times he set up to hit a puck out and he stopped and he went again and he stopped, and just there was no options there, and they played very deep when they were playing against the breeze, and they didn't leave enough players up top to even trouble Tipperary at times in the first half. And like, again, Tipperary are probably the better hurlers, so they're able to use the ball and flip the ball around and then get scores from distance. But like with Tipperary then, like the second half against the breeze, it probably highlighted an issue for Tip again, and that's winning long puckouts. Dublin got it back to 4 points, and Tip kind of struggled to try and get the ball out, and some of the short puckouts then one was turned over, and Dublin got a score out of it. And again, back to that, you know, passes going to the ground, and then it's a ruck situation. And eventually Garrod O'Connor stepped up, and he's going to be a massive player, I think, for Tip, because he is a target man. He just stepped up, caught a puck out, caught a ball, and just kind of, it kind of settled Tip a bit then, and they got a second goal then. But yeah, it was interesting to see Tip. Like, they are mixing, you know, they're throwing in the likes of Owen Connolly again this year in midfield. Sean Ryan had a tough opening half, but I liked the way Cahill kind of, he showed a bit of faith there, and he kept him there, and he eventually got his goal. So like, I'd say Cahill knows that probably what he has now in Tip is, there's nobody else out there. Like, he has gone through a fair amount of players, and he's looked at Premier intermediate clubs, and he's given them all a chance. He's brought them in. So I'd say what he has now, there's nobody, you know ourselves, there's nobody in the club championship that you'd be kind of saying, geez, he'd be worth trying out. They've nearly, you know, they've tried everybody now, and it's just about getting, I suppose, your 15 best hurlers on the field and going at it. Conor Bowe was playing wing back again. It's hard to know. Like, I still think he'd be a forward for Tip. He's just, like, you know yourself, Paul, like, and when you want a forward that's able to, you know, just glide around the place, and he's well able to take a score, and that's what Connor is able to do. And when he gets the ball in the back, he's able to glide out more bother. But just feel that you do, we still need someone like that up in the half forward line as well, in around there. But great to see Craig Morgan back as well. I know he played against Offaly last year, but he's a class player, and you need class cornerbacks now who are comfortable on the ball, coming out with the ball, and he's one of them. And like, even the goal, like the first goal, Sean Ryan just came out with the ball, let it in a crossfield ball, and Sean Ryan turned his man and scored. So I would say Tipperary won by being the better hurlers. There wasn't anything magical in terms of tactics or anything new, but Cahill was definitely Cahill and Beavens were definitely talking to their backs a lot, and there was definitely a lot going on around shape, around wing forwards and midfield tracking back for any recycled ball. If Dublin were recycling the ball out, they were really pinning their players on getting back and getting maybe 10 players into their own half and then breaking out. So I've seen that against Kerry in the Munster League as well. So I'd say, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, like, but it's a bit like Limerick, but like, I mean, it's hurling. Like, you can't create something mad or magical. Like, I don't know, sometimes Davey tries to do it, but like, I think you just have to sometimes go toe to toe with teams, and if you have the hurling like the other team, then it's just, you see on the day, like, you know, start with it. And I think a tip are kind of starting to do that.
Not to get bogged down in structures here, Murph, but for Tipperary, it's kind of job done on weekend one. You would expect to get results against both Antrim and Westmeath, so therefore they're definitely going to be in the top three at the end of this, which means top 3-1A, top 3-1B in the current format will go into the new top flight for next season. So that's probably the goal if you're Tipperary, and even if you're Dublin in that division, it's not over for them at all in terms of finishing the top three. But Tip now kind of have that job done to a certain extent. And I guess, look, they look fit, they look firing, a bit like they were last year. The whole trick is now making sure that that kind of early season promise carries on a bit further into the year for Tipperary, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as Sean was saying there, like, I understand where he's coming from when he was saying that being nervous going up to Parnell Park. I don't think any team is fully comfortable going up to Parnell Park in particular, because...
Why did they play games in Croke Park last year instead of Parnell Park then?
Well, yeah, I suppose, but didn't we point out also that they don't really have a great record? I think it's a traditional thing from maybe you probably have to go back 6 or 7 years that, that from that time previously, Parnell Park used to be a cauldron, really. But now maybe that residual, I suppose, impression is still lingering around, when realistically they haven't actually been that successful in Parnell Park. What I'm saying, I suppose, is that, yeah, they haven't been successful, but there's still something in the back of your head saying Dublin could suddenly just turn up here today and turn us over. Because particularly when you're a bigger team like Tipperary, I think if ever you're going to get a reaction out of Dublin, it's on those days. In fairness to Dublin, you know, Dublin, they are proud... they are proud in terms of not just in hurling but also in football, obviously, and they tend to get in your face. We just haven't seen a lot of it over the last few years, but I would always, you know, we played Dublin in Parnell Park in 2018, I believe it was, and we were down by about, I think, 8 points with 20 minutes to go, and we turned them over and managed to win by, I think, a point or two in the end. But we got drawn into a game that Dublin drew us into, and it felt quite frantic. And when Dublin do that, it can feel like it's nearly claustrophobic, because they put so much pressure on you. But I think, as Sean was saying there, like, they went up, and you could see at times that there just wasn't this urgency about the Dublin team. They were the ones making the mistakes. And when you see Dublin making the mistakes, then you then kind of get a bit of belief off them. They're going, okay, this isn't the Dublin I was maybe fearing was going to turn up today. But if you look at it as well, though, I mean, yeah, I have to say, when they got that point, it was about 15 minutes ago, where there was a goal opportunity and brought it back to 4 points. For all the things they were doing wrong, like, I mean, Sean, you pointed out four times where they turned over a ball, where Tipperary turned over a ball because Dublin were making faults. I mean, you can actually identify an area where Dublin could have been on level terms against Tipperary. Will be very complimentary of Tipperary and how they played and all the things, like Willie Connors was active midfield, and Owen Connolly, both of them were really good with midfield. They were creating opportunities. You know, Owen Connolly's sideline was unbelievable over to the far side. That was the score of the game, really. So you could be very complimentary of Tipperary. Nevertheless, as Sean pointed out on Twitter, there was four opportunities where Dublin just handed over the ball, really, to Tipperary, and Tipperary got four scores. So, like, you can actually pick out the areas where Dublin could have been on terms here with Tipperary. And I think that's probably an area that maybe Dublin need to focus on from a positive point of view. You know, oftentimes you do need to be hard on yourself as a team, but I think Dublin, you know, they've had a lot of negative days over the last few years that maybe pointed at and going, lads, if we actually worked on these, okay, we're missing a few players, Donal Burke is to come back, and, you know, Danny Sutcliffe and these lads, like, you know, we're missing players, but nevertheless, you know, we were in with a shout against Tipperary here, but we kind of maybe handed the game to them. You know, if you look at it from that point of view, there's a lot to work on. And I do believe that, like, you know, going out against Westmeath and going out against Antrim, particularly Antrim, I think it's next weekend down in Parnell Park. Oh, no, sorry, St. Corrigan Park, actually, next week. Like, there's an opportunity for Dublin to actually go and say, if you get a win there, like, teams have struggled in the past up in Corrigan Park against Antrim. Granted, Neil McManus will be a big loss now for Antrim as well, but
Dublin can go and get a good win against Antrim and then go, okay, well, now let's reassess and let's make this positive. If we're this close to Tipperary, to an extent, Tipperary weren't the polished article either the weekend, but Dublin can still come away from this going, lads, like, we're not within that, we're in a shout here of actually being within Tipperary. And realistically, are we playing with fire? We're not really. Are we making mistakes? We're making a lot of mistakes. And going back to a point even Sean made earlier, it'll always be relevant that you should be winning a 50-50 ball or fighting as hard as you can possibly for it, even if your game plan isn't working. Can Dublin say they're doing that at the moment? No, they're not. Like, I mean, you can definitely identify areas where Dublin are maybe being too nice against teams and individual players aren't just getting stuck in. So there's lots of areas that Dublin can actually look at and maybe go, lads, like, we either want to go at this and give it a good rattle and make our peace with it if we're not good enough. But at least if we go out and we perform, okay, if the game plan doesn't necessarily work exactly the way we want it to work, but our performance and a gutsy performance, and I'll point at Wexford the weekend. I actually thought Wexford were very gutsy at the weekend. I mean, there were a few times there that Rooks went on, and the crowd really got into it because Kilkenny were fighting and Wexford were fighting really hard for it. There's times there where we're not seeing that from Dublin. And I think Micheál Donoghue would be going, lads, I'll be happy if you go out and fight as hard as you can here. You fight here, we'll make a few mistakes, that'll be fine. But if you put in a gutsy performance, I think any supporter or any management can make their peace with that. Dublin just aren't doing it at the moment. That old Dublin we used to see just isn't happening at the moment. And I think the biggest challenge for Micheál Donoghue is finding out where he can get that fire back into him, like that fire we had with Anthony Daly and those teams. That, trying to ignite that back into Dublin at the moment, is the biggest challenge Dublin have.
Go on.
But if you look at the Dublin team, like, you're right, Mark, like, if you look at them physically, you're like, geez, they are, like, if we're walking within O'Hurley's, you're saying, geez, they are the monsters, strong, even some of the smaller lads are strong. So, like, you'd often wonder, you know, when you go into teams and you say, like, being realistic, Dublin probably aren't as good a hurlers as any of the five teams in Munster. Dublin probably aren't as good at hurlers as Kilkenny and Galway. So, like, that's seven teams you're not as good. But, like, when you're playing those teams, like, are you going to beat them at what the other teams are doing? Like, are you going to beat Cork at what they're doing, what they, the same type of game? You're probably not.
Yeah.
And, like, there's nothing wrong. I think probably sounds old school, but there's nothing wrong for a team like that to just, as you say, like, just be really, really organised, structure, and then, you know, during play, just get the ball in to big men. You know, you have Crummies, you have Danny Soft, you have all these good lads in the air, you have Hayes, you have a good few players that are really strong in the air, and just dog it out on the break. And even if you lose the ball, like, at least the opposition are under huge pressure. You know, and like, sometimes it kind of, it's like soccer, like, all these teams are trying to play like, you know, Man City, but you're like, it's not possible, like, you know.
Yeah.
And I often find in hurling, like, you can go and try and, you know, copy Limerick, but, like, you know, Limerick are on the road for five, six years. They nearly have the same team out for the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, you see a lot of other counties, there's 3 or 4 or 5 changes every couple of years, like, so that's, you know, that cohesion and that trust and all that isn't there. But for Dublin, I was looking at them the other day, I was like, if they got all their lads back that they have, I mean, a really direct and in-your-face kind of, like, put-them-under-pressure type of game. Apply the pressure up with the other half of the field and not sit back and let the other teams come at you. And I think that might work for them because that's the way they did get results before. I know they probably played with an extra back and stuff like that, but they, like, you always remember those teams maybe 10 years ago. It was just pure carnage, like. It was carnage-like. And
yeah,
like, there's nothing wrong with it playing like that. And look, are Dublin going to win in All-Ireland? No. Either way they play. We would like to just come off the field and say, geez, we absolutely emptied it. And you can look at each other in the eye in the dressing room, but we absolutely emptied ourselves there.
Murph, what went wrong with Cork? Because they find themselves in an okay position half-time. They get the goals from Tommy O'Connell and from Patrick Horgan. You're thinking, okay, go out there, go toe-to-toe with Clare now in the second half, and this one's going to be right in the melting pot. Then Clare runs 7 of 8 points over, I think it was a 14-minute spell early in the second half. Clare then go out into a lead, which is 21 points to 2 goals and 8. Cork come back into it somewhat, and it takes the late goal from Shane Amore to absolutely seal the victory for Clare. But for Cork, they're going to be sick with the way they played for that 15-minute spell after halftime.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, they handed over momentum to Clare at the start of the second half. Really important time, and they've done a lot of good hurling in the first half as well and looked really sharp. Even the goal opportunities they created, you know, it was really good. Kind of creating them to extent from nothing, but just running at Clare and seeing what holes would open up to create the opportunities. So I think the fact that, again, a slow start in the second half is always a criminal thing, you feel, as a team that, look, okay, every team goes out and tries to get the first score, the second half, and these things. But to really, I suppose, hand over so much power to Clare, that's where Cork would be really disappointed with. A good few of the things I saw from Cork was formation. Again, I wouldn't be too hard on them because it's the time of the year that we're in. You know, teams are trying to implement the formations, whatever way. But, I mean, if you look at Shane Morey's goal, the space that opened up behind was enormous space. And really, Shane Morey was just through. Now, great pass from David Fitzgerald. It was outstanding. And allowed Shane Morey to stay running. But if you were to freeze frame that as he takes it up out of the left half hour position, there was nobody out on the right side really for Cork, and it was crying out for a Clare player to sprint into it. Similar enough in the second half, now maybe it's a little bit symptomatic, like Sean was saying there, from the Cork puckouts. They were providing so many players for puckouts. There was no one really inside in the full forward line. That out ball was never there. So if a ball landed in, it was really just reset for Clare. So a lot of it, you know, I felt from Cork was just, I suppose, a drifting as a team as a whole from what the formation was. They maybe implemented a few game plans with it during the game, but what it seemed to expose was that they left massive areas of the pitch just completely uncovered. And Clare were just kind of reading what was in front of them. Clare were going, okay, the ball is breaking here, getting the head up, having a look around, moving the ball really well. They didn't seem as restricted in the formation or the style that they were playing. And as a result, kind of just played what was in front of them. So I think what Cork would be disappointed with is that, okay, when they were going good, they were really good and they were popping up with scores and they caused problems for Clare. They came back into the game really well, in fairness to them as well. But it seemed to be each time that they were handing over the power to Clare, it was just that they were at sixes and sevens in terms of giving away stupid frees at the start of the second half. Again, just that they didn't seem to be communicating, that too many players were committing out the field as opposed to, okay, lads, where's the full forward line here? We need lads in deeper. We need lads showing. So there's a small bit of confusion. But again, what I will say for Cork is that at this time of the year, you'd be critical of lots of teams with that. And I think what you have to do with teams as well this time of the year is, yeah, we have a game plan, but just allowing players to go out and hurl what they see in front of them, as Clare did. Clare reaped a lot of benefits from that. They didn't tie themselves down too much to a game plan. So look, Cork will be disappointed, and I think Brian Nolan will be really happy, though, to be honest, because they are making, and Ennis is a tough place to go, and teams really recognise that at the moment. And this is a big game, like you're saying, the start for teams to get into the top three. This is a big game as well for Clare just to go, right, that's a big win for us. We'll have easier games, but beating Cork up in Ennis, happy days, great start. You know, a lot of lads put their hand up as well. Mark Rogers was excellent. You know, Shane Amore popping up as well. Did a widespread of scores. So I think Clare will just be really happy all around. But Cork really, I suppose, gave them the platform to start that second half for them to go and, I suppose, build on it. And build a really significant lead. It was always going to be hard for Clare or for Cork to turn over.
Yeah, that'd be the pleasing thing, Sean. You know, some of these young lads coming in for Clare, because look, you accept that Tony Kelly's not going to be back till Championship. You accept that maybe some lads are going to have to be tried out. Garrod Sheedy got a point on his first start for Clare during the game, and some of those lads who've looked promising over the last year or two got game time at the weekend. And really, from Brian Lowen's point of view, we spoke about this last week, league silverware won't be the be-all and end-all, but having that competitive panel that are ready to come flying into the Championship is really what this year is all about for them.
Yeah, 100%. And you could see it last year, like, you only need 2021. Like, you probably need that much, and you get through a Championship probably with 2021 players. And it's just to have those five or six lads that you can really trust, that whereas it's starting them in a Munster Championship game and one or two lads are injured, that you can throw in and they survive. Like Rogers, yeah, he's a fine hurler. I was watching him even playing Fitzgibbon before. Like, he's a serious hurler, and he's there. Like, he's all there as well. Like, he's for a young lad. He's all there. But like, that's all they're looking for in terms of get three or four more lads to add. And Shane Amore's a kind of interesting one. Like, he's been knocking around there for the last, you know, probably 10 years now at this stage, and he's probably never really nailed down a place on the team. But like, he's fantastic pace, he's well able to hurl and all that. He's, I think for the modern game, he's perfect for what you want. So it'll be interesting. Like, but like, even Clare last year, down that Clare game with Tip, like, a couple of goalkeeper mistakes really was all that cost them. And I noticed they still got to the Munster final, but I think big thing for Clare is just getting back to another Munster final and seeing can they go and beat Limerick. I still think they're good enough to get out of Munster again. But even maybe good playing without Tony Kelly as well, because you know yourself, you know, when you're playing you're playing in a team with Tony Kelly there, you're probably going to shovel the ball off to him if he's looping around or things like that. Whereas now, oh, you're playing the ball into Rodgers, you're playing into the ball into these players, and you have to go and win it and put it over the bar. So that's good. It's probably putting a different focus on some players, even for players out the field. Like, you know, you're going through and you're looking for Tony Kelly. No, I just go for myself. Like, you know, I start with. So that's interesting to see now. I think if Clare can get another two or three players, and I think they definitely need a cornerback though. I think they need maybe another back just in case. They kind of struggled last year inside in the Munster final. Like Keane Nolan, I think he was, look, I'd be honest, I thought Keane Nolan was left out to dry. He got a lot of abuse after it, but I thought it was unfair. And I think he's gone off the panel there now. I think he's gone travelling or something like that. But I think they probably need one more back. Just, you know, you need probably four inside backs to for a championship, or maybe five. The way things are going when you're playing week on week and you're picking up knocks here and there. For Cork, I thought Toomey was very good yesterday. I think for what Cork need, he didn't light it up. But I just think for what Cork need, he's a rangy player. He came out and won a few high balls. He came out very well and just took, you know, simple ball out under pressure into the hand that got played out from the back. So he's a player that Cork need, because Dalton was their main go-to man in puckouts last year, and he was their main man. Like, they were winning, be a breaking ball or winning a clean ball off long puckouts, he was their man. And if he goes back onto Seamus Harandy, and like Harandy is, you know, look, is there 70 minutes in him over maybe what, 6 or 7 week period every game? Probably not come championship. So they really need to find players like that. But it's interesting what Paul was saying about shape. Like when you were playing with Kilkenny, like, was it, did he just hold your shape and he kind of relied on, you know, Walter and these lads to come back and help you out, but you knew you could just hold your side of the field or hold your corner or hold your wing? What way did you go about things?
No, we were always, I suppose, what Brian had always said to us is that you can go with your man. Like, I mean, if you're starting right cornerback and you end up left half back, that's absolutely fine. Go with them. But there was times, particularly, let's say, you know, go back as far as 2011 and 12, where Galway would have posed the question to us, where in 2012 Leinster final, they rotated clockwise or anti-clockwise anyway, after the ball went wide or the ball went over the bar, they rotated. So if there was a man-marking job being done, there's confusion then. Straight away the question is, do I stay with him or do I hold a position? What's the situation? So they caused problems with us then. And the likes of when we would have played Galway after that, we would have done man-marking jobs to an extent and maybe reset. But there was always the emphasis on, if we were holding the shape, and usually what would have happened would have been, we would have played a team maybe in the league, we might have been seen to be not exposed, but a team might have identified a way to draw us out, particularly draw our half back line out towards midfield and leave the full back line with acres of space in front of us. And the following week then, we would have been saying, right lads, we can't let that happen again. And there would have been a kind of an arm wrestle on with the other team to basically go, lads, half back line, you need to kind of sit back, midfield need to sit back, but it has to work as a unit then, and the half forward line have to come out. And the only way that works is that if the midfield don't work, let's say the half back line sit back a small bit, if the midfield don't, the whole thing falls apart. And if the half forward line doesn't, the whole thing falls apart. You need them as a unit working. But eventually, and the thing is with the league is that if a team tries to do that next week, they won't probably get it right. They might get it right for 50% of the game, and the following week they'll get it right for 60% of the game, and so on. And you build with the aim of, when it comes to championship, then we would have felt that the way we majority would have played would have been, our half back line tries to hold their shape, kind of sit between the 45 and the 65, with the midfielders really tracking back. When that ball has gone in over their head, they're tracking back, with the half back line with the freedom to also track back. And absolutely then, the half forward line, their job, particularly two wing forwards, was to really get back in that channel and cut off a recycled ball. But also, if we turn over the ball, you're now an outlet. So oftentimes, we saw it in the Leinster final 2 years ago, where Adrian Mullen, Pádraig Mannion was on Adrian Mullen, and Adrian Mullen was dropping far enough back, where again, that question was asked of Pádraig Mannion of, do I go with him or do I stay off him? Whereas the Kilkenny lads knew that Pádraig Mannion is staying off Adrian Mullen. And when they turned over the ball, because all the players were fleeting back, when they turned over the ball, they now had an out ball at wing forward. So really, we would have done that. And Walter was great at it as well, it still is, where Walter will be a big man under the puck out on wing forward. But when that ball goes back, he's almost on
the midfield or our own 65 line out near the sideline, and you have an out ball up that channel. So that was really the formation we would have used. And I think what was good about it as well is that when things weren't working out for you, it was kind of easy to identify where maybe it wasn't working out. You know, the simpler the game plan, oftentimes it's easier to figure out then where things are going wrong. If you have a very complicated game plan, it can actually be very tricky after the game to sift through the bones of what actually went wrong here. So on a very basic level, that's the way we would have operated, getting our half forward line to drift back out. And the odd time as well, what Brian would have also done would have been, let's say the likes of Owen Arco would have done it for years, started number 15 at left corner forward, but free license, off you go, there's your free license. And you see that now as well, the likes of Owen Cody will get it, the likes of Adrian Mullen will get it. There's only certain players that know how to use it, where you say, you're starting there, go where you want and leave two lads inside. So you'll see lots of teams doing that, but really for us, that was generally the game plan we would have often implemented, but always with the caveat that, lads, read it as you see it as well. If it's not working or you feel you need to change it on the field and don't wait for us to say it.
Right, three pieces of housekeeping before we call time in the first part of the Monday pod. First of all, Sean, if you can tell us while I go through the YouTube comments here from last week to kind of throw them out there, what are you writing about this week? And if anyone wants to read more, where's the best place to find your work at the moment?
So, at the moment now, I'm actually doing an article on the amount of balls when teams are playing the short game, where the scores are actually like turnovers, and you know, how people are getting turned over, be it, you know, passing with a no line of sight or a poor stick pass, and seeing, you know, how many scores are coming from it being conceded and how many scores are coming down the other end of the field. And just seeing, you know, because it is high risk playing that short game. So just kind of looking at, say, what happens when a team, you know, does it, and when they get turned over, are they getting pinged on the scoreboard, and what's the return on the other end of the field in terms of scores. So, I have a website called flinners.com. Not very creative, no. Should have probably asked somebody what to do. But I enjoy doing a bit of writing. It's a nice old escape, and when you're a teacher, you've got the time to play around with. But I enjoy it. So I'm going to have that. Maybe I'm going to chip away at it over the midterm next week, and hopefully have it out for next weekend, the following weekend. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. Anyway,
now, with the public sector talks, never admit that you have that much spare time. You're meant to be incredibly busy.
Yeah, and okay. We have the money got. So all right, well.
somewhere James Gale is going mad now that there's two public sector lads are on the pod this week. he loves the law in the private sector.
Well. On the YouTube, if you're watching us on this Monday, Heffo67, just 17 hours ago, was watching last week's pod ahead of the league. NFL podcast, 3 question marks. Tattoo reviews, 3 question marks. We all hate tips sing-along, 3 question marks. Whatever happened to the hurling podcast, lads? Well, look, you got a whole lot of hurling tactics this week. So, you know, we're a wide church. We bring plenty to the table here. Dublin's Fair City also giving out. Skehel is going down the spiteful role of Michael Verney in our game, who frequently feels the need to proclaim his hatred of Tipperary. Almost every week, it's the same story. Not very professional or dignified. I don't know. I don't think Tipperary people really take Skehel too seriously on this, especially when he rocked up at the live show in a Tipperary jersey in the second half. And Stockroom Tim, on O'Donovan's point, we're talking about the point he scored in 2013. Clare played Laois earlier in 2013, and every Clare player had scored that day, including the subs and goalkeeper, except O'Donovan. That backs up Murph's point. You had a very unconventional shooter stepping up to take the shot. So that's a selection of them. And Murph, one more thing for you to react to, which was sent to me last night. Let's have a look at this beautiful piece of art, the first piece of fan art we've received.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, actually.
It's John Gunter art here on the work. I'm going to have to describe what's on screen here, because obviously for the listeners to the pod, they won't know. So over James Gale's head, you've got a Tom Brady signed shirt, which is all framed up. And then you've also got the Mikey Butler fan club, which I didn't even know it had a logo, right over Murph's head. You've got a series of very nice hurling books in front of me. We've got Murph's 4 All-Stars. Skell and I have not contributed to this in behind us. We're all there with our OTB microphones in our county kits. Absolutely wonderful work, Murph.
Yeah, it was great. No, unexpected, but I never saw myself portrayed in a cartoon before. So, fair play to him. It's great. You see lots of stuff out there, like, you know, from, I suppose, lads, graphic designers, or I don't know, cartoonists, what it is you want to call them. But there's a lot of creative stuff going on there. You know, Yellow Belly down in Wexford does another great job as well. So there's lots of great stuff out there. But it's funny seeing particularly the smaller bits within that he's after picking out the Mikey Butler fan club. Like you said, has a logo now, a little bit of a swear jar on the table as well. So
Award word on the back there as well, is it?
Oh, I don't know. I think I'd have to collectively claim that on behalf of Off the Ball. But yes, we were Sports Show of the Year last year. So that's effectively where that's from. So a very nice piece of work by John Gunter. Check him out on particularly his Instagram, where he's got all of his illustrations there. I noticed he was on Twitter as well after I tweeted it out last night. So have a check. If you want to go back and check our tweet where we put out last night, you'll see all the details for his Instagram page there as well. It's a good thing to have a quick look through as well. Loads of kind of hurling based ones. Well, he's obviously a massive hurling fan. Sean, it's been a pleasure to have you on the pod this week as well.
Not a bother. No swearing as well.
No, clean. The swear jar is empty. Poor old Scale is going to have to come back and swear like a trooper after his trip to the Canary Islands when he comes back with us next week. Murph, we're going to be back for the members only pod.
Yeah. Happy days.
The members only pod, by the way, if you want to join us and get more hurling pod into your life and indeed get all of Off the Ball's content from the week, go to offtheball.com/join. Or if you know someone who likes the pod and you go, hey, I'd like to gift it over to them, offtheball.com/gift. You can get 10 months for the price of 12. If you're signing up, I know a lot of people watch us on YouTube and don't listen to us. You can sign up on the Off the Ball YouTube and get everything there, or sign up on your preferred podcast platform. Try and help people out in the DM me to ask about this. But if you're going to sign up, you want to use the OTB app, sign up there. You can use there in the Goal Out player. If you want to sign up on Apple, do so there. Do Spotify. They're not transferable from one to the other, so you need to sign up wherever it suits you best. But hopefully you can join us for another pod. Sean, thanks a million. Paul, we'll chat to you during the week on the members pod as well.
Sound, lads.
Sound. Cheers.
OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy,
proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.